Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Lee Cantor here, another episode of High Velocity Radio, and this is going to be a good one. Today on the show, we have Gary Prenevost with Franet, an author of the book, The Unstoppable Franchisee, Seven Drivers of Next Level Growth. Welcome, Gary.
Thank you, Lee. It's a pleasure to be here.
I am so excited to learn what you're up to. Well, where would you like to start, with Franet or your book? Would the book be a better foundation for Franet?
Sure. I guess they're intertwined because the book is after 30 years of franchising and 20 of those with Franet.
So they are hand in hand. Let's, for the listener who isn't familiar with Franet, why don't you just kind of give an overview of Franet?
Okay, well, Franet is a franchise system itself. I'm a franchisee in Toronto area, Canada. I work anywhere in North America. But we help people who are at the stage of wanting to go into business where they're saying, I'm not sure what my options are. I'm not sure where to look. We help them build their business model, introduce well-suited options, and then coach them through all stages of research. So it's kind of like executive recruiting applied to franchising. We get paid by the franchisor on successful matches.
And then your potential franchisee, how do you kind of identify that person, or do they come to you?
Oh, they come to us, Lee, or we do a lot of marketing, franchise shows. It really depends on where people are. A lot of people dream about being business owners, but only about 5% actually take that leap. It might be surprised that 80% of all people who buy franchises buy direct from the franchisor. They either attend the franchise websites or other material, and then they engage with the franchisor, and they only look at one business. And I look at it as there's a lot of risk of getting seduced by the opportunity because they're probably not doing as much research as they should. They're going faster, and they're not talking to enough people to understand how much it takes to really get that business off the ground. And so there's many people who have been disappointed by the franchises that they bought. There's been a lot of success, but there's been a lot of disappointment too. So we remove a lot of that friction by coaching people through that journey.
Because I would imagine that if you're a person, especially if you're coming from a non-entrepreneurial background, maybe you work for a large corporation and this is your first kind of time you're doing something on your own, you may not even be aware of the number of franchises to choose from. Aren't there thousands?
In the U.S., there's about 3,600, depending on which survey you read. In Canada, there's over 1,000. So yes, there's a lot of options. Just because it's franchise, it doesn't mean it's good. It means it's been duplicated. So it depends on one's risk level. Are they early adopters? Or are they more want proven systems? There's a lot of different considerations that have to be taken into account. And if it's the first time opportunity, or pardon me, if it's the first time entrepreneur, you want to think about it this way. They're going from being really good at their careers to having to learn a business and being not so good at it through the learning phases till they get good. So that means they have to follow systems. They have to understand what the new work is, how well they're supported in those different things, Lee. So these are all the things we want people to understand before they buy the business so that they have better expectations.
Now, is some of the kind of maybe misinformation that's out there, and it might be your own bias, that, hey, I like, you know, I'm just retired or I just got laid off and I want to do my own thing now and I love animals, so I'm going to look for an animal franchise.
There's a lot of that happens. I love food, therefore I'm going to go open a restaurant. I love golf. I'm going to open up a golf center. I think the foundation of those perceptions is the courses, whether they're online or old books, do what you love and the money will follow. I maintain you have to believe in the value proposition or the you have to have conviction for the offering, whether it's a product or service, but you have to love the work it takes to put that in the consumer's hands. And that is rarely doing the work. You're managing people, you're leading and coaching and supporting your marketing, their scheduling. There's a whole bunch of business functions and nobody's good at everything. So what are the things they're really good at? And different businesses need different functions. So this is where the fine tuning comes in. And that's a lot of the work we do is helping people really assess their strengths and their gaps and where are they better suited.
So when somebody is working with you, maybe in an early conversation, is it more about kind of managing expectations and getting a feel for their strengths rather than just, you know, giving them the list of 10, you know, restaurant options because they said they liked, you know, pizza?
Definitely the former. I do a lot of work, personality assessments, financial picture. What are the resumes and the skill sets? What are the skill gaps? What are the criteria? We look at 12 to 14 criteria, like how many hours you want to work, what type of staff you want, things that people don't typically think about. And most importantly, Lee, what are their short-term, mid-term, and long-term financial and lifestyle goals? Only then can we do a good job at matching. I don't know before I start talking with somebody if they're even a viable candidate for entrepreneurship and franchising. So that's why we go through that in-depth deep dive so we can really focus where they're at and make sure they're punching within their weight class, to use a boxing term.
Now, have you found that the person that comes to you today is different than they were maybe 30 years ago when you first started working in this industry, in terms of maybe 30 years ago, somebody was happy to own, you know, one unit somewhere. And now there's more and more of these, what I call like these professional franchisees, where they have a portfolio of brands that they are working with.
There are certainly more people looking for the portfolio career, where the multi-unit, multi-brand, some cases. I think the single biggest difference that we see now compared to even 5 years ago is the element of control. Pre-pandemic, people wanted operational control. They wanted more decision-making authority. They didn't want to wait for things to happen. You know, all the corporate challenges or other, waiting for decisions. With the pandemic, that shifted to the control being around how my personal life and my business life integrate, and they want more control over that. They still want the operational control, but I think relationships, the importance of relationships and family life really shifted through the pandemic, because life can change in a moment. And so people care about what they are putting their time into.
Now, we mentioned earlier you're the author of the book, The Unstoppable Franchisee, and I believe that's based on some research and work you've done dealing with the top performers. Can you talk about what makes one franchisee stand above the rest?
Well, this is a big smile on my face as I think about the research. I interviewed over 30 CEOs of big franchise systems, medium-sized and small franchise systems. What do the top 1-4% of their franchisee base do that the rest of the franchisees don't? What are their traits and characteristics, and what do they not do that the rest of the franchisees do? Then I interviewed those top 1-4% franchisees, and it came down to the 7 drivers. The most important one is mindset, growth mindset. The top performer is always looking at, what do I need to do next? I've achieved this level of goal. Reflect what worked, what do I need to adjust? And they go into the next level of learning. So they never allow themselves to get stuck in a comfort zone. They continually sharpen the saw and improve, whether it's operational improvement or personal quality of life improvement. You think about it this way: an average performing franchisee, they are competent at running the business. They know what to do. They're okay at it. They've got a half decent life. Strong franchisees are running good businesses. They are doing very well. They've got a much better quality of life, but they're kind of at a pattern plateau. The difference between going from competent to proficient and proficient to being masterful, the top performers, is a dedicated focus on a few critical things, mastering that, and then moving on to the next few critical things. And one of my top franchisees said to me, "Gary, when I hit mastery, it's time for me to delegate and help somebody else get to mastery so I can focus on higher level things." And I think that captured really well the mindset of a top performer.
Now, when you're in your work of coaching franchisees, and I would imagine you've done some work coaching franchisors as well, is that right?
Yes, do a lot of keynote speaking and franchisee workshops.
Now, how do you I hear this a lot. I've interviewed a lot of franchise owners. I've interviewed a lot of franchisors and a lot of franchisees. Franchisors get frustrated that the franchisee isn't doing the thing. The franchisees get frustrated that the franchisor doesn't get that their market's different, that things are different wherever they are, and that they can't possibly do all of the things they ask. How do you kind of help each of them get the most out of the relationship and not make it adversarial, where a lot of times there is a lot of friction in what each of them wants, even though you would think, just looking at it as a layperson, that they would both be trying to do the same, achieve the same things?
Oh, that's such a loaded question in terms of the where we could go with the answers, Lee. Let's start first with the business systems. The franchise exists because they've got proven systems and processes. And the difference between an average performer and a strong performer is how well they embrace those processes. Different franchises, some franchises are much better than others in terms of the actual strengths of the brand and the strength of the system. But in every brand, you have franchisees who are knocking off the cover off the ball. And that is in territories where the previous franchisee didn't succeed in the exact same territory. So it speaks to me that it's not the market, it's the individual. It comes down to how much of the system they embrace. I call it selective engagement. Average performers, I will use this part of the system, Gary, because I like it. That other part over there, yeah, I'll get to it, or I don't feel like doing that. So that's from the franchisee side, and it frustrates the heck out of franchisors. The franchisors, if they focused more on coaching the franchisee, so I'm a big proponent of business field coaches, where they start to focus on the improvement of the operation at the level and at the focus where the franchisee's personal goals are the prime driver for the change in outcomes. One franchisee, I need to make more money. Another franchisee in the exact same system, I need to have more time with my family. But they both have to execute core operational elements to make the change. So this is where it comes to selective engagement, is the average franchisee doesn't use as much of the system as the strong franchisees.
Now, when it comes time, now in your work in Franet, you have a person come to you and they say, hey, I'm interested in possibly exploring franchising, and you do the assessment, you find out that you think they could succeed here. How do you help them kind of understand the trade-offs of, oh, do you want to be with an established brand and they're, your franchisee number, 600? Or do you want to be with an emerging brand where you're franchisee number 6?
Well, that's one of the 12 criteria I look at, which is the degree of risk they're comfortable with, not financial risk. They will assess that through their journey. And as they do their business plans, this is operational risk. The younger the franchisor, the higher the risk. There's less systems, there's less marketing, there's usually a smaller leadership bench. So the franchise system itself will evolve. The younger, the brand new franchises, the micro-emerging 0 to 10 franchisees, they have to be comfortable breaking into a market, being an alpha and a beta test, where they are willing to go through some of that change. A lot of our clients aren't willing to do that. So they want a more mature system, maybe not where there's brand maturity, but there's system strength. So that's part of what I get them to look at, Lee, as part of their criteria.
And then, so how do you kind of explain the trade-offs of an emerging versus an established?
Well, the emerging, there is usually more territory available. There is the more personal relationship with the franchisor because it's a smaller base. If they're a strong operator, they get to be part of the foundation group of franchisees where you're that nucleus, that initial franchise family, you're an anchor member of that family. There sometimes is more operational latitude. And so those are some of the benefits. One of the biggest ones being there's availability in my market, provided that the franchisor has got a solid value offering and a good system. The downsides is there's no brand, so the franchisee has to do more heavy lifting in terms of marketing, in terms of community engagement to get that brand known. But every franchisee should be engaging the community regardless of how mature the brand is.
And then the benefits of an established brand. There's less territory, I would imagine. There'd be more brand awareness.
More brand awareness, more system strength. The less, shall we say, more like a number. There's you're not as noticeable in the community. So your voice doesn't carry as well. But boy, oh boy, are there ever certainly solid systems and processes, and there's usually brand potency, that instant connection with the brand. And I go back, Lee, to what I said earlier on about the importance of following the system. See, I look at, and this always catches people off guard, I say brand is irrelevant when somebody's looking at buying a franchise. And people say, what the heck are you smoking? Brand is everything. No, brand is everything only when you can deliver the brand experience expectation at or above expectation level. And that takes running the systems, leading the staff, creating that awesome experience every time. That's skills. That's leadership. That's learning how to do that. So it's the systems of the franchisor that trump brand to me 10 out of 10 times.
Now, in your own journey, can you explain to an entrepreneur why you chose to go franchise route when you could have done, you know, Gary's franchising portfolio and business? Like, you have enough experience, you kind of know where all the bodies are buried, you know what makes an ideal franchisee and a franchisor. Why didn't you just want to do this on your own? Because a lot of the entrepreneurs that are choosing franchising might also be considering going out on their own.
Well, part of it is I started as a family business. That was a start from scratch business after I left the bank. And we went through the trials and tribulations of launching and growing a business. We became Toronto's third largest company of our kind, but it wasn't an easy path. And we had to create a lot of systems. So after that experience, I liked leveraging other people's ideas and optimizing them. I'm not a creator, I'm an optimizer. And I learned that about myself early enough in my career that why I stayed in franchising.
And is that part of the assessment when you give some potential prospective franchisee so that you can determine, are they somebody that would be better suited on, you know, doing their own thing rather than following somebody else's rules?
We actually have, in our personality assessment, Lee, we have a compliance ratio score. The higher the score, the more you like rules and structure. I actually score a 6 out of 20 on that. So I don't like rules and structure, but I've been in franchising for over 30 years, so I found a place. It's understanding for any person considering this, what is the structure that they have to live with that cannot change, and where do they have operational latitude? In highly rigid systems, there's very little operational latitude. So somebody who is more operationally flexible will feel stifled in that type of environment. They need a business that there's more operational latitude. So yes, that does affect the choices that we show them.
So now in this journey, is it more rewarding for you to see your franchisees successful that you put in business, or is it getting a new franchise sold?
The number of people that I've been able to stay in touch with, and even writing my book and researching some of those people, some of my past clients are the number one franchisees in North America. It's a great, great joy to see them succeed. I got into this business to help people change their lives. I call it unlocking the golden shackles that come with corporate North America. And it's a different experience for each one. I get my joy from helping people get to their next level. And two-thirds of the clients I work with, they end up not buying a franchise, but they make better decisions for their career once they've come out of that journey. So I get to help people change their lives. I think I've got one of the coolest businesses in the world.
Now, are you seeing any trends that we should be aware of in terms of new franchisees? Like, are you seeing maybe a parent-child franchisees more than you had in the past, or younger people getting into franchising more than in the past?
I'm seeing more multi-generational, where it depends on what the circumstances are. Sometimes mom and dad are, it's the bank of mom and dad, and they're not going to have much involvement, and the kids are you know, early 20s to early 30s can't afford to buy it on their own. Or the other scenario is where mom and dad want to build something, have a legacy for their kids, but the kids aren't ready yet to take it over, might not even want it. So the focus of each of those scenarios and every variant of those is dependent on who is going to be the prime operator of the business, because that's what's going to drive success. And that's where the matching has to be. You don't want the parent to buy a business where the kids might get involved and the kids never want it, because that business will never get off the ground if the parents aren't driving it.
Are you finding that more people are open to or even encouraged to become master franchisees or multi-unit developers rather than kind of buying one unit and seeing what happens?
I see a lot less master franchising than I did even 5-7 years ago. I think the sophistication of the support of franchisors and with the coming platforms and the private equity coming into franchising a lot more, there's much better support systems. So the need for masters is being reduced. Multi-unit franchisees, there's much more what I'll call empire building, but I've also seen a lot of people who buy three units. They're able to open up all three units and do at five units. Most people are able to open up 3 to 5. It's got to be a special person with a lot of talent and money to be able to continue to grow. If they're buying large territories, there's a responsibility of the franchisor and the leadership team of that franchise, because it should be a team, to make sure they can fulfill their growth and their scale obligations. It takes a lot. It's a different enterprise to run a business with 10 units than it is with 3 units. And they have to be able to build those leadership levels on that journey. And a lot of people get stuck. Well, I've got 5 units. I don't want to hire that extra GM. It costs too much. And then they shackle themselves to slow to no growth beyond that.
So what's next for you?
What's next for me is continuing to do what I'm doing in terms of the keynote speaking and starting to work a lot more with franchisors and their franchisees, with the ability of me being able to work anywhere in North America. I'm building my team further at FranNet, so we get to work with a lot more people right across the north and south of the border.
And if somebody wants to connect with you regarding FranNet or get a hold of your book, is there a way to do that?
My website, theunstoppablefranchisee.com. Gary Prenevost, GaryPrenevost on LinkedIn, or gprenevost@frannet.com.
Good stuff. Well, Gary, thank you so much for sharing your story today. You're doing such important work and we appreciate you.
Well, thank you very much. It's an honor to be here.
All right, this is Lee Cantor. We'll see you all next time on High Velocity Radio.